All right. So if I were the president of youth group, that's capital Y youth group, I think I've come up with a plan. Maybe there's a few holes, especially depending on how some of you see some of this stuff. But my plan for youth groups all over the nation allows for churches to have youth groups where all youth, no matter what they believe, can be served well. I mean, while we're at it, genuine care about youth hasn't been lacking in youth ministries I've either been a part of or have witnessed a bit more closely. Now, my plan not only allows for us to serve well all youth, but the church also doesn't have to sacrifice convictions. But there will have to be what I would call a needed dose of humility. So real quick, I'm just one person. This is just one perspective. Most of the Christian fellowship in my life, starting with my childhood, has been with what most of us would call unaffirming Christians. Now, many of the Christians I've hung with for so long, they don't like that terminology, unaffirming. It sounds harsh, like one doesn't accept a person or has a desire to love that person. And many Christians I know, they don't like the terminology, and I understand why. But I'm in favor of letting folks use words that describe how they feel. We can at least allow for people to express how they feel, right? That's like having discussions, class 101. So although most of my time has been with what we'd call unaffirming Christians, it was rarely in the context of an echo chamber. Some folks I know in the church I'm a part of right now are very much so what you'd call gay affirming. Now, it's not the norm in my church family, and what we all know to mean affirming of a lifestyle in the LGBTQ, my church would not be. But I'm no spokesperson for the church, just a little part of the family. So don't listen to what I'm saying. So here's my context in which I'm operating from, people who I've been informed by. Unaffirming and affirming Christians who are typically open to being wrong about things in general, willing to have a conversation, folks who don't demonize me for believing differently. And I'd say much of my context has been built from Christians who wish there was nothing in the Bible that they interpreted as prohibitive to this lifestyle, because it'd just be so much easier to be happy, gay, and accepting of all. And that sentence was a bit redundant depending on how you heard it. So I hang with people who really do love and aren't sure how to calibrate all this. And the reason I understand how this dilemma feels, I lived in it for 35 years of my life. That's most of my life. I've believed that the letter people are just wrong and in error. So I also hang with some gay people, some who have chosen to fellowship in churches that aren't vocal about being supportive of their orientation, but they sense God's love and don't feel at all condemned. Now, some may not understand how this can work, gay people fellowshipping in churches that aren't in favor of their lifestyle. I'm just telling you what I've seen from people close to me. And maybe this is one of those examples of how love is the answer. And I'll say this, I think that sort of setup is only possible for folks who have gone through major healing from words and deeds spoken and done against them. But I'm not gay, so I don't really know. Now, I also hang with some gay people who just can't be in fellowship with anyone who has any hang-ups whatsoever with their lifestyle, but can understand and value that many fellowships are still seeped in pretty traditional Christianity. Many of these bright folks take into consideration the nature of being human that includes not seeing things the same as others. Now, I'm sure some of you will have context that would say, this is all bullshit, and okay, that's fine. It's totally fine. So here are some of my presuppositions that need to be in place in order for this plan to work. And this goes back to that needed humility I mentioned earlier. So first of all, you have to believe that people can be truly authentic in their desire to love while being wrong in how they believe. You have to believe that people who are truly following God to the best of their ability, they want to be holy just like you, and they're truly convinced that their perspective is right and only want you to believe the same so that you can be properly informed and most useful as a human. I mean, isn't that a crazy thought? Both sides claim convictions that the other side needs to adjust to? I mean, dare I say, both sides believe the other side needs healing from their erroneous beliefs? And while we're on the topic of healing, let's not forget, in any discussion, that's our common damn ground. We all need healing. All right, so presupposition number two, you have to believe that God's grace is fierce and it's very likely more magnificent than we can imagine, possibly meaning more people may be saved than we ever thought. I find my plan unworkable if at the very least that thought doesn't sound really awesome to you. If you do indeed believe in a place of punishment, and not all Christians believe that the reprobate exist in eternal suffering forever, but if you do believe in this place, my plan doesn't work if you see yourself as the primary vehicle for moving souls out of the danger zone of hell and into the safety of God. If you believe strongly that responsibility is on you to administer salvation to others, you'll likely have a hard time with what I'm about to present. And I'll say this, there's really no plan that would make everyone happy, but this has to be better than what we're doing now. And right now it feels like, let's teach you rules, teenagers, because we're afraid for you. And even though I get that, I'm a parent and I have unhealthy fears for my kids, it just doesn't work. And it only forces teenagers to associate guilt with the church, which I thought the gospel was that first and foremost, we're saved from guilt and condemnation. But we're fearful, and it comes out in our teachings and in our admirable attempts to steer youth in the right direction. But in such a vulnerable time as adolescence, the immaturity we all lived with, oh my gosh, be perfect as your father is perfect. You're going to give the youth that? Mom and dad, you too? That's scary. That doesn't sound like a compelling gospel to me. But anyway, we do this. We take the prodigal son story and we say, be like the older brother. But no matter how we shake it in the real story, God does it differently. So, okay, one more thing I personally need to add. I've been in many conversations in the past. Tons of people see the teachings of hell as more of a power play from churches to maintain control. Even though I'm sure that's the truth in many cases, maybe most, I've always been around people who were burdened by the thought of anyone perishing and afraid for people and traumatized with a fear in a place they desperately don't want to see their spouse or kid or neighbors go to. So my plan, here you go. So the general premise is we make our youth groups very functional centers for youth, kind of like a dream center for youth that focuses on youth-centered stuff. And it's open to youth of all faiths or those who have none. Listen, you can even have a big sign that says, mostly or all Christians run this youth center. I mean, that'd be a weird sign, but I don't care. As long as we can learn how to just serve and be there for people in every aspect of their life, put up any sign. But Christian parents and youth leaders typically start with, we gotta save kids from hell, while God gives the prodigal son full freedom and is just ready to embrace his son at any time who is in need of love. But while we're so focused on something I don't believe we have a whole lot of control over, and Calvinists would agree, but it seems like it would be prudent on the church's part to focus on other areas that God also cares about. Maybe this time, and for the time being, we let God be in charge of any spiritual interaction. You know how Jesus says, when I was hungry, did you feed me? When I was in jail, did you visit me? There's other needs. Let's apply this to the youth. When I was failing my classes, did you help tutor me? When I was with the wrong crowd, did you show me love anyway to try to point me in the right direction? When I had to come home every day to a home in which I didn't feel safe, did you open your door so I could have a place of reprieve? But I get it. Most folks are just scared for someone they love. But it seems like in this way that I'm presenting, you at least have their attention. Hey, we want to be here for you. How can we serve you, help you in your studies, offer tutoring, give you a place to play outside and inside, maybe a safe place to video game. And while the teenagers are with us, the culture we've set up is saturated in love for one another, a drive to love enemies, a teaching of how doing this is what the world needs and is the way to make a difference. showing that the more love, maybe the easier it will be for God to move in the realm of truth. How about that? And here's the thing. Do we really have a choice? I mean, people typically are already coming to the table with the faith they have or lack of, for better or for worse. And unless there's a miracle, their minds aren't changing. Do you know how to work a miracle? Most of you hopefully said no. Do you know how to love someone where they're at and pray for them? Hopefully a few more yeses. So, you know, in the New Testament, there's a line I think we don't pay attention to enough. It says, be careful what you do in front of unbelievers. It seemed to be something they were very conscious of back then, probably because the resurrection was so real and there was so little religion muddying the waters. So yes, at that time, there seemed to be an advantage the early church had, but maybe Christians back in the day were so normal because they weren't religified yet. Don't know if that's a word. And maybe back then it was normal for the commingling of believers and unbelievers because even people who didn't believe were intrigued by all the ruckus. They still wanted to see and hear about this Savior that people claim to have hope in. They just don't want to eat at the table yet. But can they sit and join the conversation and watch as we seek if they want to? And in the meantime, maybe learn from where they're at, even if it's just curiosity. But here's how our youth groups are set up now. You need us. We have truth. You're on the other end. So we serve you. We don't join you and we don't learn from you. All along forgetting that all of us, Christians and non, can be on a wide path that leads to destruction. We all need help. Hell, I've been a Christian my whole life, but in my 40s was on a wide path of destruction. And I don't believe that meant pointed in the direction of hell. Again, this all feels fearful. And Jesus says, fear not. And by the way, the company he kept made people mad. Yeah, so that's my plan. All churches can unite in this. You could have big youth centers or small, more private ones for different kinds of kids. I mean, we can help these kids with counseling toward better mental health, showing them values like how to stick up for people and be there for your neighbor, how to not be a slave to your cell phone, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We can be a family. Let's grow as people. What if we could include any kid in this process, huh? Raising leaders who people want to follow and listen to because they're kind, self-confident, but self-aware, mentored. We provide a place like this, and they'll want to hear more about why you're doing this. Why are you helping me? At the very least, they'll hear about love, and maybe more people can find solace. But what about the spiritual? That's important too. Well, that's simple. For those who want more spirituality involved in their community, we keep that part simple. We'll have some community groups or small groups, whatever you call them, life groups, in which Christian kids can really dig deep into the spiritual. Oh, you could have a couple of small groups during the week starting at 7 p.m. on Tuesdays and Thursdays for all Christian kids to come ponder on the gospel and receive love from one another and from God. Imagine the possibilities of this. And what a way to teach our kids that are already in our churches to be the hands and feet of Jesus. They can be a part of this work. Love and energy sacrifice so that others can gain. All right, so I want to leave you with a few other thoughts. I guess I would call them admonitions. Take it or leave it. Don't teach the Christian kids that you'll lose your witness if you mess up and sin. It's sucky out there, man. Do you really believe your kid sinning is going to affect the eternity of another being? And if you believe this, that's God's fault then. He knows. We all suck and are going to make mistakes. If he allows folks to be punished forever because of a human error, that's on him. And I say that because I don't believe it works that way. Secondly, regardless of beliefs, you got to remove the guilt and shame from a daggum struggle. And what I mean specifically are struggles in sexuality. I mean, do we believe this is a part of nature? Come on. They're doomed for a tough fight to make good decisions. The last thing they need is guilt thrown at them. And as we interact with teens, maybe we should leave our beliefs and opinions. Let's leave them to the folks who want to indulge in foolish and stupid arguments that produce quarrels. And if this is too uncomfortable and you see this maybe as a lazy approach to what you deem as calling out sin, maybe then let's start with the logs in mine and your eyes. Thirdly, certainty and an apologetical, systematic approach to God isn't as necessary right now, and I'm not sure that even in biblical times, certainty was the goal. I mean, faith and certainty are two different things, right? The Bible talks of faith, but nowadays, people are actually more open to spirituality, I have found. And to this younger generation, an honest, "but I can't be sure because I've never died," goes a long way. But we want to say, "I know what I believe is true about everything we believe, and they know we don't know because it's impossible for the natural to be sure about the supernatural." That's why it's called supernatural. And I'd say lastly, stop fear-mongering about sin. So let me tell you a little theory. We've been intense about sin because we're afraid this stuff represents an unsaved person that's doomed for hell. But what if we let go and accepted that people are always going to fall? I mean, adults are always going to fall. What if we showed our youth that, hey, we're going to try and help you make good decisions, but we're here when you don't? And if we believe in a gospel that says no more shame, we should want our kids to be spared from shame of sexual sin. But it's actually the most guilted sin, and it's because we're so scared. But sexuality, whether we like it or not, is happening to them, and they have no experience with how to address it. And will you still be available to help if the person you are trying to help disagrees with you on some morals? I know I've personally been used, and I think people would say I was very helpful to them, even though we believed very differently on some important matters. And what kind of weak-ass grace does God offer anyway if it's not strong enough to be available to kids making messes? Because that's first of all what humans do, but I'd say it's what kids will naturally do. It's a part of growing up, and I've never personally stopped making mistakes, and I've had to unlearn this greatly due to some of my youth group's teachings, who these leaders, by the way, loved me very much and just wanted what was best for me. So if we accurately represent the love of God and kids see this love in the realness that it is, we're teaching them that God is never a being that you'd want to run away from, because you're always safe with a God of love. And when I read the words of Jesus, it sure seems that way. Like we are really safe when the God of all creation says, "Father, forgive them all, for they know not what they're doing." So that's my plan for Capital Y Youth Group. What am I missing? Oh,